Welcome to the Construction Technology News of the Week with Matt Huddleston and Jacob Delbora. From groundbreaking innovations to industry-shaking updates, this is your Construction Technology News of the Week. Join us with our guest of the week as we dig into the latest news shaping the future of construction. All right, Jacob, what do you got for me in the news? It's been quiet these days, huh?
Yeah. I mean, there's not really much happening, especially in the world of construction. So I got one for digital twins, but something that's coming out later today, I hear it's by a really, really good author. I mean, he's really smart in this area, but I have an article being published on Health Facilities Management Magazine, and it's the value of digital twins. So this is actually going to be article 1 of 3. And the whole article is, what is a digital twin from the point of view of a facility manager? And why is this something they need to pay attention to? Once they get into it, it's a very good intro to it. It's a very good idea. If you go back to Tuesday's episode and listen to everything we talked about there, it talks about the idea of, hey, we're going from what was a project being delivered to running and the performance of assets. So all these different objects located within that overall project. And that's where the disconnect is right now. And I think the whole episode that we just did kind of just talks directly to it. So I'm excited for that one to come out. Obviously, I'm pumping it a little bit for my own sake, but I love talking digital twins. So what do you think, Jeff?
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the ConTech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@theconTechCrew.com to learn more.
I'm psyched that you're doing a series on it because there's not a lot of clarity, right? You know, we had Robert Brown on and, you know, he tore it up. You're always hearing me fight you on it being a data twin, not a digital twin. But ultimately, you wrote this for facilities management, but I'd really like everybody in the process to really understand, because from the earliest phase of a thought of the building and the architect and design and the engineering and the general contracting and then installing things in the building product manufacturers, all of you, if you can understand that ultimately your customer is that facilities manager, and you hit a couple things in there, Jacob, that I really, really like, is these are a group of rare breed people that got to get it done. Think for a second, put yourself, and especially because this is really around healthcare facilities. So put yourself in this situation. You're in an ambulance headed to the hospital for an emergency room, and there is critical things that you're going to need. And if they don't work, facilities doesn't get to say, well, we'll get to it tomorrow. Sorry, we couldn't find it. You expect and you have to have everything running, and it must be up all the time. And so these folks have a huge responsibility and complexity, and they don't know if today it's in their ICU unit that's going to have a problem with air handling. They don't know if tomorrow it's the MRI area and power. They don't know if it's filters clogging something in just some silly area that's causing a fault that could be interrupting a surgery. Like, think about this for a second. And then also, like, they got food. I mean, if you guys don't realize, like, take a step back and go back to Matt's episode, because we talked about this. Like, these are entire cities that are also, you know, treating patients of all types, emergency to cancer to just diabetes and other, you know, people who come in and out every day. It's so crazy. And so understanding and putting yourselves in those positions and the value of the data and the value of the objects, like Matt said in Tuesday's episode, is like to be able to access that air handler. We'll go back because we talked about air handlers a lot. To be able to access that air handler's information, history, service history, and really know what to do makes their day so much better. So I'm psyched that you're doing this because I think respect for perspective is huge. And understanding the perspective of the people who spend more time in this than any of us earlier in the process ever will, hopefully, is awesome.
We talked about object concepts, but, you know, measure to manage, that whole concept. So, well, one, what's our strategy to measure? So this goes back to that object datatization of your building. Digital twin, in my mind, is a concept of objects that define the structure. So that's how we're going to measure. We're going to associate information to objects. And now what's the use case to manage? If it's keeping critical infrastructure up and running, do you have the meters that can feed an object and then have like a, when you say measure to manage, a dashboard, KPIs that tell you how are our things running? So there's a couple of things you can measure. One, what's the throughput or capacity of this and when is it hitting that threshold and how do I know? And then do I get an alert to know, let's be proactive in the maintenance, not wait for it to break down. Two, when it comes to data, again, let's say it does break down, how do you fix it? What do you need? Well, where's the answer for that question? Where is it stored? How do you find it quickly, especially in a critical situation? If something fails and you need to fix it fast, where's the information that says, here's what you order, here's where to go the quickest and how to reinstall it or repair it? And so it goes to data. How do you structure and organize it? Then how do you measure it, manage it, and monitor it? And it starts back at the beginning, that concept of digital twin. Digital twin starting with a BIM model, getting educated through the process of construction. Here's the product we chose. Here's why we chose it. Here's all the product data about this. Here's who installed it. Here's who inspected it. Here's who ran the commissioning reports. Here's why it works or doesn't work. And here's a whole data set wrapped around an object. So when facility takes over, they have that history. But if we're doing it right, digital twin for facility management, we're now connecting new inputs. What are the meters and sensors reading? How are we gathering that? How are we dashboarding it? How are we reporting out and monitoring it and managing?
I love doing this. I love talking to it. But I mean, if you don't know me, I'm passionate about what I do. And it's pretty obvious if you ever talk to me. But the healthcare facility management is something very, very unique. And it's because there's a level of empathy that has to go into their buildings. They have people in dire situations that are actually coming to their building and they have to ensure that it's working. One of the craziest things I've ever heard was there's construction being done right next to a hospital and they're expanding hospital. The drilling that they were doing was actually shaking and vibrating the NICU. And now everybody in the world, if your kids in that NICU, what do you want? You want them to stop. And that's basically where empathy has to come into play because people are going through tough times and this is huge for them. So how do we leverage it? How do we ensure that this makes their job easier?
I have actually experienced that. I walked a job site in St. Louis that was an active job site next to a hospital. And they talked a little bit about the things going on in that hospital and how they had to come up with inventive solutions to make sure that they didn't disturb it, which drove some really great innovation but through empathy, which is cool. And to the bring you back to the episode with Matt on Tuesday, you know, Jacob, you talked about this. It's also an economy of scale here. So the other thing this can provide is like working on your service contracts and understanding where you have service contracts and how you can maximize those. It's a visibility and understanding that, okay, well, if we choose this product, great, but it might be a little cheaper today, but we don't have the service. We don't have the experience. We don't have the, there's again, an operational efficiencies. So I wanted to touch on that. But the other thing I want you to do, Jacob, is this is part one of a three-part series. Give me a teaser into two and three.
Yeah. So into two or three is basically the idea of what that digitization, that datatization of objects is from construction and how that is an incredibly important part of this, because if you're able to solve that, the ability to set this up and tie systems together as soon as you can for facility managers is pretty much accelerated. And then the last one is literally about the use cases and you know, ability to actually use the digital twin in certain areas. This first article talks about the clients that the facility manager has. They have their VPs, they have the users, the end users of the building, the nurses and the departments, and then they also have patients that come in there. And they actually have to appeal to all three of those clients. So the third one's about like, how does this kind of help you appeal to all three?
Awesome. Well, I'm looking forward to it. What else you got for us today, buddy?
Yeah, this is going to be a real quick hit here. So facilities dive. I have an article on bill to abolish OSHA has zero chance of becoming law. Of course. Thank God. Of course, I think any of us in the construction industry, as soon as we heard that somebody was putting a bill together to abolish OSHA, was like, why? Why? What does that solve for anybody? whole construction companies are built on safety first. Like, this is such a big thing, and I can't believe this was even put forward. I don't even need to talk about it anymore, but I just wanted to throw it out there because thank gosh that somebody was like, no, this, there's no way.
Well, it's funny because I got a text message. I didn't hear about it that day. I was kind of sequestered doing some other stuff and I didn't hear about it. And then I got a text message from Tannis that said, yo, what is going on down there? If y'all don't know, our other co-host, Tannis Laviniak, she lives in Canada. And she sent a like, what in the, and I had to take a step back. Now, listen, I'll be honest, given this conversation that we've had, like creating efficiencies to make OSHA less about doing things for doing things, you know, checking boxes to check boxes, and more about advancing safety, advancing adoption of new technologies and new installation methods, safer methods to do things. Great if we can do some of that, but you can never get rid of it, man. This is what, I mean, we know what this industry did to people before. And if we want to continue to be the industry of choice for the future, we can't do it. We just, yeah. It's silly, but it is great to see, like, you know, zero chance of becoming law. But hey, we're going to throw it out there anyway, right? It's like, let's throw it at the wall and see what sticks. Matt, you think we can get away with no OSHA?
No. And I don't think it's going to speed things up either. I think the idea might have been, you know, maybe we can go faster. You know, they're weighing costs, whoever wants to put a judgment on that. But it's like, I don't think it helps or achieves what they're proposing it might achieve. And so what's the point of doing it? It hurts a lot more than it helps, more likely than not.
Well, that I like that you jumped through it. And I'm going to jump on top of that because, look, let's be honest. We didn't say it in there, but this was a Trump regime pushing for the abolishment of OSHA. We're seeing a lot go on. But, you know, I talked about it on a recent episode with Justin Wayan from Suffolk on tariffs. And it really threw me down a rabbit hole of looking into the tariffs. And so I brought an article today, as Trump threatens more tariffs, how could they affect construction? And this is not a rabbit hole I wanted to go down, but as I got down it, the impact of these tariffs and proposed tariffs on our industry is clear and present danger.
Massive.
We cannot, as an industry, we struggle now when we have supply chain issues to find alternative materials, to find things that suit what we do, and we cannot produce them. The interesting part here is we can go through all the numbers, and some of these numbers are, I mean, just think, if you do a 25% tariff on steel, that's a 25% increase in your steel budget on any project. And how much of every project, especially when you think about the facilities that we're building now in a data center, an Amazon fulfillment center, in a hospital, are steel and are based on that product. Can you imagine sucking up and the amount of change orders we're going to have to do and the amount of contractual issues we're going to have if that actually happens? But then I don't think people realize how much of our drywall comes from Mexico and how much of our softwood comes from Canada. And hitting these tariffs is going to create havoc when it comes to our costs. We've already seen it spike once in COVID when we couldn't do anything about it. And there was substantial change orders that had to happen along the way and substantial increases in the cost. We're already blowing up our costs. So it's really creating a lot of uncertainty. And I think it's a time in which we've got to stand up and say, like, whoa, yeah, I want to see the US, you know, bring things more on and create more things ourselves. But there is a limit to what we can do. And it's going to take time for us to build the facilities to do it. You know, like the CHIPS Act. The CHIPS Act was awesome. We don't even have any of those buildings yet. We're still building them. And by the way, they're going to go up 25% if you haven't already procured the steel and got it in here. And again, I'm not talking politics. We're talking about policy.
And predictability, certainty. Like, we went into it to managing a project. You need some level of certainty to be successful, to give a bid to an owner that the owner can honor without. Now what's going to happen is, okay, with uncertainty, people are going to try to pre-order materials. So they're going to spike demand now, even before tariffs kick in, because everyone wants to get ahead of these things. Then they're jacking up prices for everyone else. And then what's going to end up happening is, if these do or don't go into effect, if it's a negotiation tactic versus actual policy, the uncertainty that that just like unfolds under it. So do you wait and see, and then do you get messed up on your budget because you didn't plan right? So it's gonna unlock, I mean, what's causing uncertainty already, but it's not going to be helpful for industry at all.
Well, and before you go, Jacob, there's the other thing is I think it was slightly a tactic, like a negotiation tactic, but even the people watching it said, wow, this went way closer to coming into play than we ever thought. Like, we woke up. So can y'all wake up? Jacob, what do you got for me, man? What do you think?
You know, it's disheartening. If you were through 2010 in that recession and what you saw in construction then, and then if you went through what happened in COVID and all the projects that got canceled and people just sitting there, we were lucky actually in COVID on how much kept going. The construction industry is in such a good spot right now and being driven so much by the CHIPS Act, Inflation Reduction Act, that it sucks. It sucks knowing that this could literally create such a problem for the construction industry that it could pop, the bubble could pop, and it's tough. I think the idea about the tactic too. So the tactic happens. People are reactive. This is what both of you just said. So now you have people going out and pre-buying steel and all this material. What if it was just a tactic? Well, all the steel manufacturers just up their prices because they know they have the demand. So now you're already paying higher to get that. And then what if he rescinds this in 2 months and you just paid, you know, a premium on your steel? Or if I might not even worry about buying outside the country, I'm going to start buying internal right now. These facilities are already busy anyways. Steel fab can't handle the extra work right now. They're building facilities to handle the work that they have internally in this country. It's just mind-blowing to think we can flip a switch and we're back to the 1970s and Pittsburgh is banging out U.S. steel left and right, and we can just go back. It's disheartening. I hope it's a tactic. I hope that we continue moving forward. But
again, if it's a tactic, then great. It's having real impact right now.
Yeah.
People are stockpiling, I can tell you right now. And stockpiling costs money, right? And in the end, if you're an owner in this business, that cost is going to make its way to you. Just hands down, I've been watching this forever. It always ends up, the people who end up holding the bag are the serial builders in our world, because ultimately that's where the cost ends up going. It is the way it is. And so y'all should be watching this and doing something about it. But also, I'm for us building and producing more here in the States. We need to do that, right? We've proven this, but we're never going to be able to do it all. It's kind of like software, right? Like, we can't go back to those days. It's not possible. So we need to partner with these other countries. We need to make it work for both of us. And eventually they're going to want our products, because I believe we're advanced manufacturing in our country is coming back. It's going to be much more automated and robotic. And that's awesome, because that's the way things should be built. And we are and should be on the cutting edge of creating these things. So, but this is just kicking us while we're down or preventing us from getting up. So I don't know. It's beyond me. But if somebody out there is listening, I know some of y'all with some big pockets out there ain't going to like this. So y'all do something about it, would you? Or call me up and tell me to shut up if you want, you know, whichever one it is. I'm going to end on a high note, though. I'm going to end on a high note here. And this is, you know, Jacob, you went to your, you know, own article. I'm going to go to an article about right here in Colorado. If you guys know, I'm Colorado based. And this is just a local newspaper, KOAA News. I heard it on CPR.org. So that's Colorado Public Radio. First India-based space surveillance company expand to the U.S. chooses Colorado Springs as a new home. So I know surveillance sounds interesting. This is really, really cool, because they have created a set of technologies that uses telescopes and then sensors on the satellites themselves to avoid each other. So this is so satellites can see other satellites and avoid each other. Because, by the way, there's a lot of satellites up there and they can run into each other, and this has become a problem. And that can cause serious issues in our world if we are losing satellites like that. So, but in order to really work with the Defense Department, you have to build these things here in the United States. So they are upping and taking it. And we've here in Colorado have given them, I think it was about $800,000 in tax credits to come here. If y'all don't know, there is a huge bases down in Colorado Springs. So it makes sense that they'd be that close to, I believe it's the Air Force Academy there, and they'd be close to it. But this is really, really cool because this brings jobs. And what I thought was interesting is, as I was looking through it, you know, they'll bring about 61 jobs, average salary of about $82,000, and they're software engineers, systems engineers, business developers, finance roles, like really good jobs to have in our state. So excited for my state to do this and excited to see this type of manufacturing and building coming into the United States. Jacob, what do you think, man? It's just a nice fluff piece to end her off with, right?
I'm actually glad to see some of the innovation that this company's based around. I haven't heard of them. I hadn't seen them, but the fact that, you know, there's so many dead satellites up there that just are orbiting and they're going through. And I mean, it must be a havoc for the aliens to get through all of them when they try to come in. So I really think this is going to be good. At least it'll alert us when those aliens do come, but it's cool. I think I am for us bringing in. I mean, if you look where I live too, South Carolina, North Carolina, we're huge on manufacturing now. Everything is about, hey, can we give them tax credits? Can we give them ability to come here and create jobs? It's cool to see. I'm interested to see more what they're doing, and then also where that technology goes and the telescopes and everything, if it's picking up more stuff outside of it.
Matt, what do you think?
Real quick, I'll add it's kind of like you guys just said, let's not look backwards and try to replicate what we've already replaced. Let's look forward to build the new, the better processes. And so maybe hot topic button, but that's the idea. Let's bring the world's best and brightest companies, people here, make it US-based, get the innovation, get the profitability, get the quality of life, have it here where we like it, where it's nationally secure and improving our economy and improving our people. And let's do these things to create new jobs to replace the old jobs, like larger concepts there. But how cool is it to think some of the best companies in the world would want to come here to do work here, or have to come here to do the good stuff they need to do or want to do to solve the new problems, like satellites crashing into each other, blocking the aliens from visiting us? That's the kind of stuff that this seems good. This just seems like good stuff that if we can continue it, we're on the right path.
Well, listen, I had a nice text exchange this week with James Benham, the original founder and host and crew chief of the Contact Crew this week. And he used to say, listen, guys, the future doesn't look like Terminator. It looks a lot more like WALL-E. And if y'all remember, the reason in WALL-E that they had to leave was because the satellites had blocked out the sun and had created a problem above us that we needed to go up and get out. So, unfortunately, James, you may have been right. Well, maybe we can get these guys to come in and help us out and prevent that, or at least allow the aliens a way to get down here and help us clean it all up, right? Whichever conspiracy theory you want. Listen, guys, this has been awesome. I love a good news. We got fiery and feisty, but we also had some fun. Matt, it's been awesome to have you as a guest and now have you come along with the news. Thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Jacob, as always, man. Love what you're bringing to the industry. And I hate to tell you this, but people do know who you are now, and they do know how passionate you are because they're listening to you every week. And I know how passionate you are, and I'm excited to have you on the show with me as many times as I can. Thanks, man.
Hey, thanks, Jeff. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for the Construction News of the Week with Jacob Delbora and Matt Huddleston. To read all our news stories, learn about our guests, and to listen to the show, visit thecontactcrew.com. This is the Contact Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.